Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this community and wellbeing meeting. And especially welcome to our guest from Viola, Graham Smith, who is the business manager, and David Kitchen, who is operations manager. Have I got that right? Yeah? Well, welcome. Thank you very much for giving your time and coming this evening. Before I start the meeting, I would like us to take a minute's silence. If we can all stand up and have a minute's silence in remembering Chris Barron, whose funeral it was today, and she used to chair this meeting many years ago. Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. God bless you, Chris, and thank you for everything you did for this committee. Right. We'll start on the agenda, which is the first item, minutes of the on the 5th of September. Does everybody agree they're a true record, or is any anybody want to comment on anything? No, can I sign them then? Is that okay?
Yeah,
thank you very much. Thanks, Jackie. Item two, apologies.
None received.
No apologies, thank you. Public question time? None. And councillor sessions? Nil. Yeah? Members' items? Yeah. It's nil. As well. Okay. Right. The Health and Care Overview Scrutiny Committee, there's been a little bit of confusion actually, so I haven't got any report and you'll find there's nothing on your papers, and that's because we've had a discussion with the officers, with the county and with the borough, and we were getting three lines of report come probably December, which will be brought to the meeting in January. So I hope everybody appreciates that. There's been a little bit of confusion, but at least we've got it sorted out. So apologies for that. Okay. Right, so we move on to item number six A, the annual report. And I'd like to bring Councillor Fordham to the table, if you'd like to give a summary of, I think you do want to say something, am I correct? Councillor Fordham?
I'm happy to, Chair.
Yeah, I think, I invite you to the table.
I won't be repeating what you're about to present.
Thank you for coming along.
The purpose of this report is to provide you with the annual report service improvement plan for the period between April 22 and March 23, and that's in respect of recycling, waste collection services, and processing of dry recycling. The council outsourced those matters to Veolia in a contract commencing 4th of February 2018, which is due to end in 10 years, 3rd of February 2028, with an option to extend through to 3rd of February 2038. Formal management of the contract includes monthly contract meetings between Veolia and officers, and quarterly partnership meetings which include the portfolio holder and the senior executives from Veolia in the UK. The report in front of you highlights the key performance indicators for the year, a very brief summary, some 48,000 tonnes of recycling materials and waste was collected, 99.95% of collections were completed successfully, and that equates to over 4.2 million collections. And in terms of the recycling rate, the county average for all district and borough councils in Staffordshire is 44%, and the borough achieved a recycling rate of 46.26%, so ahead of that average. And I think it would best if I halted there, Chair, because I'm sure we had to hear more detail from you now.
Most definitely. Could I invite? Yes, thank you. The table.
We did prepare a presentation, but obviously with the technical difficulties, it's been a bit difficult, but in fairness, most of it has been covered. We did have some key figures that we were going to present, but most of those were about the strike rates, the waste collected, which the waste during this period was a 7% reduction in total waste collected. And there's no real, we don't have any real clear definition why that was. It was proposed that it is due to sort of cost of living, etc. So all waste decreased slightly, and there was a 35% fall in reported missed assisted collections, so that was an improvement. One thing we wanted to sort of go through was sort of why we do get missed collections and what are the causes of those missed collections. So there's a number of reasons. One is, as you're all aware, there's a number of roadworks going on recently, but that's a constant issue that we have. We manage it as best as we can, but we can turn up one morning and the whole road may be shut or whatever else. So we'll go back the next day and we keep going back until we get in. But obviously that will raise some missed collections. Also with new builds, sometimes the only time we find out there's new properties being moved into and these new builds is when the next one is moved into on the estate and we're not aware of where they are until we get a missed collection. So that is some reasoning behind that. There are occasions where we have vehicles which are blocking a road, so we don't have access to that road. We again will keep trying to go back to that. We try back later in the day to see if we can get back into that street. And then if we can't get in that day, we'll go back the next day and keep going. But over that period of time, a resident has the opportunity to ring up and report a miscollection. So that's where some of those miscollections come from. And obviously, adverse weather can also affect that. And these are all parts where we will go back and keep going back until we attend it. But that is some of the reasons behind it. One of the questions that I've regularly been asked when we've been in this meeting previously is about near misses or close calls, as we call them. And we've been asked over a number of times is what the difference is. So in the report, you will see a number of items on there reporting our near misses, our close calls, and also the accidents and incidents. So just wanted to give you a bit of a definition of each part so that you can understand what those things in the report actually refer to. So a near miss or close call is an event not causing harm but has the potential to cause injury or ill health. So the way we look at it is that near miss and close calls are very important to us. The more near misses and close calls we get reported, we can then solve and resolve those issues so they don't come up again, and hopefully that is a way to prevent the accidents from happening. So the more near misses and close calls we get through our workforce, the less accidents we should have in theory. That's the theory behind it, and it does work. So an example of a close call or near miss could be a damaged bin reported by a crew having a potential to cause an accident. So we can then replace the bin or repair the bin, and then that way that would prevent an accident. One of the other item is an incident. So an incident is an unplanned event that doesn't result in injury but does cause damage to property or has enough significant risk to merit recording. So some of the incidents that we have recorded in our system are unauthorised entry on site or a vehicle fire. So we do have instances of vehicle fires which are identified and and dealt with by either the fire brigade or ourselves, with the crews putting the fire out, or we do bring it back into our depot and deal with it there. Or we do have occasions where we have people come onto site looking to steal whatever is on site. So it is a permitted site, so we record all of those as well. An accident, reasonably obvious, and it is a separate identifiable unintended incident which causes physical injury. So over a period of time we do have those. An example of those is a slip, trip or a fall. And obviously there's a riddle which is reportable to Health and Safety Executive for under the reporting of injuries, diseases and dangerous occurrences regulations, which is the acronym of RIDDOR. So those are fatalities, for instance, which we haven't had any of those. So specified injuries, fractures to fingers and thumbs, or anything that's over 7 days, so incapacitates a worker for over 7 days. And we did have a demonstration of the actual Heinrich's pyramid of accidents, which will show you the more near misses that you have, the less accidents you have. So that's why we promote the reporting of near misses in the depot. And the only other thing we wanted to go through again was each year we do a number of events in the local communities, and we normally sort of give a quick review of those. We've been engaging with local schools. We've also been doing Veolia Orchard, which is something that we share out with all the schools in the borough. We all have the opportunity to apply for approximately 5 trees. It varies each year to the trees, and then this year I think we've added strawberry planting and things like that. So this is a nationwide project from Veolia, but it's to get school children interested in planting the trees. It also gives them they look after the trees once they're planted, so we've worked with Street Scene to plant the trees, and then the children look after them and help to plant them, and it sees them grow, and then they can take the fruit off the trees. So this is our second year, I think, we're about to run into. So it's an annual project now for Veolia. We've done a number of school events, doing assemblies, and also taking a vehicle to site and letting the kids have a look in the vehicles and let them sort of see how it all works and explain to them how it works. And we get the opportunity, we attend with Becky Martin and from the council, and we give them an overview of what happens to the waste, where the waste goes, how it's recycled and all those different things. So it's a way of educating and getting those kids involved to promote what we do. We obviously do a lot of events with Catherine House Hospice. Our biggest event that we do each year is Christmas tree collection. So last year people could donate to Catherine House, and then we'd arrange to collect the trees for them, the real Christmas trees. So this year we raised £12,000, over £12,000 for Catherine House Hospice. And each year, well, this last week in fact, we just started our Christmas collections for food banks in Stafford, for Rising Brook Church, and also Hearts and Hands, we work with them. So I think last year we raised over £4,500, which we then spend and provide gifts for children and non-perishable foods and things like that for those that are struggling at that time of year. So we're hoping to improve that this year. And then we also do our Easter egg collections for sort of local, we do it mainly for one charity, which is A Child of Mine, which is for families that have lost children or siblings. And so they have a play group. We provide them with approximately 80 Easter eggs for all of their children at their last one of the year for the Christmas. And then obviously we do that for Hearts and Hands as well. And they get distributed to people in need. And also, I think they also provide some to schools as well. And I think they have over about 300 Easter eggs each year offers. So, we're very aware of our sort of local communities and try and get involved with as much of as many of them as we can. That's all from me. Obviously you've got the report there, and I'm open to any questions.
Thank you very much for that. That was really interesting, and I've got to say I think the school project is absolutely fantastic and that. But talking about that, I'm going to go through the agenda and go page by page in a minute, but I just wanted to comment. Do you still do your Viola community grants? Do you still do that?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That was one of the questions I was going to ask. Right, committee. I think that was very, very interesting. And thank you so much for all helping all the vulnerable people in our borough. That's wonderful. Thank you. Right. We'll go through it page by page, and then we'll. If anybody's got any questions, please just let me know. Right, start on page 3, page 4, page 5.
Can I just confirm, just my stupidity maybe, 5.5 item 8, when it says 48,900 of recycled material and waste, it's a combined total.
Yes.
Okay. So I just want to make sure that really works.
Yeah. Thank you very much, thank you. Page 5. Page 6.
Sorry,
sorry? Yeah. Yeah, right, okay. I'll let gentlemen go first, ladies, if you don't. Yeah, okay.
Page 6, 5.7C.
I'll let him.
Sorry. It says here, introduce the Viola Street Kind campaign aiming to reduce verbal and physical abuse experienced by Viola staff. Well, that's not acceptable, that sort of thing going on. Attacking Viola staff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can you explain what sort of experiences you've had of your workforce being attacked in this manner?
Yeah, definitely. So as they can be varied. Majority of ours locally are, I would say fortunately, but they are sort of more verbal than they are physical. The problem that we have with some of these is that over a number of years it's become the norm to collection crews. So getting them to report them is quite difficult because they just shrug it off and carry on. Sometimes they feel that's the easy way of doing it, but we are rolling out the project of Street Kind, which we've done across all our other, not all of our other contracts yet, but the plan is to do that. But it's just make people aware that exactly that, that it's not acceptable, and to support the guys to report it more so that we know that where exactly these things are, because if we don't know that it's going on, we can't then do anything about it. Where we do have reports, we obviously escalate that within our company, and also we work with the Borough Council as well to take anyone to task that we can do, but normally it's someone that's driving past in a car or going past. It's very difficult to then follow that person up, but that's the principle behind it, to make them aware that, you know, that the employees should be acting in respect and they should expect the respect back as well.
Thank you very much. Councillor Rosen, did you want to
So it says that there was quite a significant reduction in the like amount of recycled waste. I know there's a few kind of things here, but do you know any more details on why there? Page 30, yeah.
We're going through it.
I mean, it's like it's referenced on that page, obviously. It's referenced right at the start, where is it? Yeah.
Page 5.
Yeah,
5A. Okay.
But, like, obviously, the fifth, yeah.
Okay.
So, obviously. I'm on about E. 5E.
Page,
so, obviously, it's dropped.
Page 5, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it's dropped quite a significant amount from 56% to 46%. Obviously a 10% decrease is quite a significant amount, so I was just wondering if there was a bit more detail on why that happened.
Yeah, so a lot of the recycled tonnage is based on garden waste, quite a key component of it. That's heavily dependent on the weather. It may sound that weather has a huge impact on the volume of garden waste we collect. We've also seen a slight decrease on dry recycling, so the contents of the blue bin and the blue bag, as Graham alluded to earlier, in part that may be due to the cost of living, people sort of cutting back, where they're not making perhaps quite as many sort of extra purchases they may well have done previously, that has an impact on the type of waste that the people are generating, less sort of recyclable material and more of the residual. So we can't 100% say that it's due to the cost of living, but we suspect that that's having quite an impact. Mm.
You say that the garden waste is also going down, and that's like most of the weight. Obviously, with the summer we've had like quite a lot of growth, so you thought it would be more like brown waste, do you think that might also have something to do with the cost of living, because obviously people might not pay for the brown bins as such?
Potentially. I think the number of subscriptions is relatively stable. It does seem to be that fluctuation mainly down to just the volumes of garden waste that we've seen. It always seems to be quite a tricky sort of beast to quantify reasons to buy, but we tend to see that fluctuation mainly on the garden waste more so than the dry recycling side of things.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Ladies, I don't know which one of you two was first, so. Right.
I just wanted to know, it's a 10 years contract. Who decided it was 10 years? Did you ask for 10 years? Or
no, that was what was put out as a tender process, yeah.
Okay,
thank you.
So
Councillor Hobbs, sorry. Councillor, did you not want to speak? Councillor Leeson.
Yes, 5.7b, this anti-contamination. What measures are you doing to do that? Are you putting out leaflets or what? Is it right that if, say, one bin contains contaminated waste, then the whole load, you know, if it goes into the, then the whole load is classed as contaminated?
Well, in terms of contamination drive, we constantly review bins as we collect. So
yes.
The guys are trained to check the contents of the bin as much as they can, because obviously they can't go through the bin,
no,
but they
no,
can
quite.
Have it. But
yeah.
they're quite experienced guys. Many of them have been working on the contract for a long time. And you can normally identify certain parts. If you get a pizza box on the top, which has got food in it, obviously the rest of the bin
yes.
could be the same. You can also tell by weight and smell and different things. So they're the ones at the moment that are the front line. We can then lock a bin out and contaminate it with a contaminated hanger and take photos and report that back in. And the second part of the question was, sorry.
What are you doing to publicise this and so on? For example, pouches, you know, for pet waste and things like that that people were putting in bins and so on.
Yeah,
so not recyclable and so on.
Yeah, no. So yeah, it's the guys that are on the front line that do those sorts of things. So
yeah.
they educate the residents by leaving the container on. The photos that we take also go directly into the contact centre. So if a resident rings up to complain or
yeah.
to say that my bins were
yeah.
missed, then that's.
Yeah.
But
do you do any sort of leaflet advising people what they can and what they can't? I mean,
yeah.
I know somebody that, you know, the window envelopes,
yeah.
they cut out their little windows, you know, because they say it's not recyclable. The paper is, but not the window.
Just the window itself performs
yeah.
such a small volume of the overall volumes that we collect. It's not necessarily much of an issue. It doesn't stop the envelope from,
yeah,
from
yeah.
being recycled,
but,
for example.
To advise people
yes.
what
yeah,
they can
the sort of
what they can't.
Wider sort of scheme of things. So Graham alluded to the collection crew has been able to record instances of contamination to re- intending to work with the client officers to communicate to residents in a much more targeted way. So you mentioned leaflets, it's quite an expensive manner of communicating with residents in a sort of blanket approach. So we're trying to use that data to be much more targeted in the specific areas, also the use of social media as well. So I'm trying to avoid the mass production of large volumes of printed material. But it's about communicating to residents in a simple message as well. I think previously perhaps we tried to clarify all the different instances of where people can't recycle. I think the message is perhaps quite a bit simpler to focus on what we do want to accept. So it's simply plastic cans and glass in the blue bin and paper card in the blue bag. It's a bit of a simpler message to get across than trying to cover off every sort of instance of what can't be recycled.
Do you put any information on the Borough Council's website?
Yes, there's quite an extensive amount of material on there. But
on the website, on the Borough Council website, there is links to where all the recycling goes to. It gives them information. There's all the details of where they go to, where everything goes to, and what can be and can't be recycled. One of the other things that we do alongside the Borough Council is we do visit local community groups that we're invited to go and speak to them. And we give them an overview of the contract, how it's developed. And then we sort of will take questions, and it's things like that where we get a lot of questions about the windows and envelopes and can I put this in here. But when you we're there to give a sort of half an hour talk. By the time we've done that, we're then into half an hour of questions, and everyone's got questions of bins and they're quite engaged with it. So we've been doing these, like I say, we work with Becky Martin at the council, and we've done them for a few years now. We're doing different, whether it be a women's institute, whether it be an educational group, or any group that gets together. We kind of, by word of mouth now, we're doing quite a few in different areas, and that's where we can sort of really engage with the members of the public that are operating our service, and the schools as well. We work with the kids, because once the kids know how to do it, they soon tell the parents how to do it, and we see that benefit.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Councillor Barron.
Thank you. The review of the assisted collections, I've got quite a few residents that do require that service. I've had no feedback that they've had problems, and I see you are looking into that as well. Have you had problems with many assisted bins being missed?
Not many of the assisted bins. The advantage that we have with an assisted is it's actually marked in the in-cab technology for the crews. So it's actually separated out from all the other collections. So on their in-cab technology, they'll have all the streets that they're going to that day, and they can confirm a whole street off or lock a whole street out in its entirety. But with an assisted collection, they have to lock it out when they're outside that property, and it won't let them go past that screen unless they confirm that. So there's a definite positive confirmation that it's either they can't access it for some reasons, or they've serviced it. That also gives us a GPS stamp of where they're signing that off. So if we do get those sorts of queries, then we can sort of say, right, well, they were there in the street at that time. One of the problems we do have with assisted collections is when the assisted collection is where a crew get to the property, then they'll go up, they'll collect the bin, and they'll bring the bin down. But there's a number of occasions where carers may bring those bins down, and we get to there, and then there's no bin to go and collect. We'll empty that bin, but then we put it back to where it's fine, because that's where we're collecting from.
Yeah.
And it's only then when the resident then rings up, go, oh well, my bin hasn't been returned. So we go back, and then we will drop that bin back. But that's the only problems we tend to have with those, or if we can't get access because the car's in the driveway, or if the gate's locked, or different things like that. So there are occasions where assisted bins do get missed. But those are few and far between, and they're ones that we monitor. We actually monitor everything weekly in the depot, and then we go to, we then look at it fortnightly, and then we meet monthly with the client and the council to discuss. But in the year we're talking about, in 2022-23, there's a 35% fall in reported missed assisted collections. So the ones we missed in previously was a 35% improvement on those missed, because the opinion of everyone in Veolia, and especially at Stafford, is that there's no reason we should miss an assisted. It's there in front of us. We tell the crews that they're there to go and do, so we shouldn't be missing the assist.
Mm-hmm.
The assisted review is something that's done annually. That is done by the Borough Council, but that is about confirming that assisted collection is still required, because there may be reasons. A resident that required the assisted collection may have moved on somewhere else, may have passed away, or anything like that. So that review is about finding out if it's still required.
Does it cause you very much problem if they forget to unlock the gate for you to get in, or whatever?
It doesn't really cause that much problem, because we'll report that on our system to say the gate's locked, and if the resident does ring up to say the gate was locked, in fairness, we try and always go back to an assisted collection anyway if that's the case, because we're normally not far away, so we can get there pretty quickly. So.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Nixon, did you want to?
Yeah, it was just on 5.7E around the works on the depot around improving sustainability later in the report. power, but that for whatever reason, because of legislation, became a non-viable option. What work is carried on at the site?
So we've recently we completed an energy audit on the depot completely. We have replaced all the lighting with LED lighting around the yard for the lighting. We have recently, as part of a review, added in additional lighting, but that's been bought in on a tower lighting. Annually, we would, through these winter months, we would hire in a tower light so that we can have the light in the yard. That was normally a diesel-generated lighting power. We now have a solar-panelled lighting rig, which is permanently in the yard. Don't need it much through the summer, but it's now started working the last couple of months of the light changes. We did look into solar panels. That's not necessarily off plan at the minute, but there is environmental permitting controls and regulations that may come into force, which mean we would then need to alter the layout of the depot, which would then that would make that redundant or would have to be moved. So at the minute, we're waiting for the results of that environmental permitting review, and then we can then push ahead with one or the other. But wherever it would go, the ambition from Veolia is to be as sustainable as possible.
Thank you. Councillor Hood, did you
want? Thank you. I'd just like to give you a pat on the back and also staff of Borough and Becky Martin, because in my experience, my ward is water in stone. And if there is a problem, and these days it's not very often a problem, resident will call me, I call Becky Martin, and between the two of you, it's literally sorted that day. And I'd just like to congratulate you on such an efficient service. Thank you.
Councillor Ross, did you want to come back?
Just like when we were talking about the raising awareness kind of thing and stuff. I was wondering, is there any like recycled materials that potentially could be recycled that you're looking into starting to be recycled at curbside, such as cartons, alternative milk cartons or juice cartons, that kind of thing?
Like a Tetra Pak.
Yeah.
So, in terms of the material mix that we've currently got, so we changed the service of the blue bag introduction in 2020, mm-hmm. So that the material could then be taken to a Veolia facility, so that we could sort it there. It gives us much far greater control over where that material goes. All the material, with the exception of aluminium, remains in the UK. Aluminium goes to Germany. So in terms of looking at additional materials, where it makes environmental and sort of commercial sense to do so, we're always open to looking at additional materials in conjunction with obviously the council and the officers. In particular, when you talk about Tetra Pak or composite materials like that, they're always quite difficult to recycle because of their composite nature, the combination of different materials. Although there is potentially legislation that will mean that we'll collect a wider variety of recycling at the curbside, so that may be things like soft plastics, Tetra Pak, or cartons. But until that legislation is finalised and in place, we haven't yet got that sort of stable environment, if you like, from a regulatory perspective to make the investment in the sorting technology and all the rest of it, and the development of end markets for that material. But I'm sure we'll sort of cross that bridge when the legislation is in place.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Councillor Wilson.
Yes. Some of our neighbouring authorities do food waste. Mm-hmm. Are there any plans to introduce the food waste?
So, again, talking about legislation, so the Waste and Resources, the Environment Act is the actual legislation. Calls for the segregated collection of food waste on a weekly basis by March of 2026. The secondary legislation to that act, which would really define the detail as to how that will happen, is not yet in place. We are currently looking at it. We've modelled the resources required from a collection point of view to deliver that service. It was already priced up within the contract as a variable item from the outset, so from that perspective the contract is quite future proofed. But as I say, until we've got that secondary legislation in place and really defined detail, we'll continue to work with the officers to monitor where we are in terms of the.
But it is likely that it will come into effect sometime in the future.
There's a potential. Pending on the switch.
Thank you, Councillor Leeson, for that, because this is something we've talked about and about food waste, and probably not now, but in not too distant future, we're probably looking at a task and finish group to look at that actually from this committee.
Right.
So that would be quite interesting. So, where was I? Councillor Nixon, did you want to question?
Would it be possible to organise it in such a way that we could produce compost and sell it?
Sorry, can you?
We're talking about food waste.
Yeah, but it's not as now, and it's go on.
I'm just asking the question: would it be possible to collect the food waste in such a way that we could compost it and sell the compost?
I think that sorry.
Would that ever be viable?
So the food waste tends to get collected and then taken to an anaerobic digestion facility. Essentially, it breaks the food waste down, generates methane, biogas, and that is used to power engines which generate electricity. The digestate, which is essentially a form of compost, if you like, is then spread on agricultural land. It's not necessarily sold, it hasn't got a huge amount of commercial value, but to farmers local to these facilities, they do tend to spread the digestate to land to improve the quality of the soil.
So is that a cost implication to that, or is it possible to earn some money for the borough council?
Yeah, there's a potential for the operator. It depends on the contract that is entered into by the authorities, so whether any revenue is then shared back. But as I say, there isn't a huge amount of commercial value to the digestate. It's more to do with the generation of the power from the using the methane is generated for as the food waste sort of degrades.
Thank you. Josh, did you want to come in there?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. On that point, so the process you were talking about is the universal composting process, so where you collect it with food, with your garden and food waste together. Historically, that type of process costs you probably double the amount of traditional composting. The government are actually calling for separate weekly food waste collections at the minute. So to take that the food waste in its own entirety and go through that particular anaerobic digestion process. So at the moment, that is not on the cards. What the government's calling for is we do it basically, as described by Jamie. It's taken out in its own entirety in a container of such, and then it's taken away and then anaerobic digested.
Can I respond,
Chair? Yes, Councillor Nixon.
I'm just wondering, is there any possibility in the future that a grant might be made available to make that sort of system more viable, because I would imagine it possibly would.
The government's calling for separate weekly food waste collections, and they are going to, by the end of this year, they're saying that they will give us the details behind how they're going to fund that for local authorities, certainly for the next 3 years or so. Mm. So that's, so that's where we are at the minute. But certainly, as it stands at the moment, there were a couple of authorities that did put their food waste with their garden waste, such as Moorlands, are the only ones that are left in this at the moment. Cannock Chase, we stopped doing that back in 2016 when our new contract came in, because it was costing us double the amount and the food waste yield was extremely low.
So,
do
we need to be putting in place some things to get a grant to do that?
No, government are going to provide us with money. From March 2026, when the mandate needs to come in, and they're going to release the details of that funding to us, hopefully by the end of this year. Probably may well be into the new year, but they'll be releasing funding across England for separate food waste collections.
I think, you know, we're asking questions to the officers and that, and this has all been worked on as we speak, you know, so this is something, you know, it's something for our future that we've got to be looking at. And
Chair, if I can just come in there.
Yeah, you can.
I've spoken to the Chair previously about doing a presentation to the next scrutiny committee on resources and waste strategy 2018 and what the implications of that were going to be on the authority. So you'll get that extra detail that you're perhaps looking for now. Hopefully we'll be able to do that next group, that's okay.
Yeah, thank you very much. I thank you for that. Okay, let's move on. Where did I get to? 18.9, there's nothing on there really. Page 10, that's just the index, 11. So, right, we're going to page 12. Is there any questions on there that anybody got to ask about?
That's the question. I know one or two of us want to ask a question. Why is there so much of the information redacted? Is this a Borough Council thing or a Borough
Council
thing? Why is it redacted? Why isn't it beautiful?
I'll come back on that.
Yeah, you stay at the table, John.
Yeah,
I'm trying to keep your feet
adjusted. Basically, it's because it's commercially sensitive information. That's why we redacted in public copies that go out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you've read it, but we can't read it.
Well, you can read it in closed session, certainly.
There's no press here.
Yeah, this is a public meeting that the press would normally tend to attend. So there are certain information that we can allow out and others that we don't allow out.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
It's just that some of the information starts off by saying, and this will cost.
Yeah. I mean, on page 12, we talked about the item there about visits and what, and I know that yourself and Mark Withington, Josh, have been on visits. We have talked about that and that, and of course, I do understand, please correct me if I'm wrong, they can only take 10 at a time to be looking at the WISD. So it's very difficult for if everybody wants to go, so I think we'll... Is it a consensus that everybody would like to go and look at a WISD facility? I think everybody would be interested in that, so it is something we'll have to look at. And
we currently have one arranged in the coming
next week.
Next week. And we can do more that we can do. That's, I think we're visiting, is it the MRF and the, so it is the recycling facility and the waste to energy plant. So we can arrange more visits.
Is that something then that was thrown open to the committee, or is that through you, Councillor Fordham?
It wasn't through me. I was contacted and asked if I'd like to do that to bring me up to speed. So it was arranged.
Lee Booth organised it.
Pardon?
Lee Booth organised it.
Right, thank you. It's just a shame that the committee didn't know about it. None of the other people were invited.
The last meeting,
he did offer it.
Suggested that we did visit, and we had a. We had to apply to Jackie and there wasn't enough support.
I thought that was to visit the parks.
That
it wasn't
oh
to
oh
visit
the
park.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
was
yeah. Right,
Brendan
okay.
McEwen brought it up about visiting.
Yeah.
That's something I'd written
yeah,
down
right,
actually
yeah,
to say
to
you.
Was
there wasn't enough
yeah.
people that
yeah.
put the name forward to go and
yeah.
visit the park. So. I take your point, Councillor Nixon, but you know, probably they'd have to book a day's holiday or off a day's holiday or something if they want to go on these visits, because you can't expect the recycling to be open at night time. I don't think it's. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but.
they all operate 24 hours a day, both
right,
do, but I don't think that.
It would be.
Yeah, it wouldn't be able to visit because we have to have different people there to provide
yeah,
that visit.
Yeah,
so.
That's what I was thinking, right. Okay. Any more questions on page 12? Page 13? Page 14? Page 15? Page 16? Page 17? Page 18? Page 19? Can I just comment on page 19? I'm really pleased to see that you're taking mental health on board. You know, with your first aiders and that, and looking after your staff, I think that's
yeah.
brilliant.
Throughout,
so thank you for that.
In terms of looking after staff, we have mental health first aiders in the majority of our depots.
Yeah, good.
We're planning on taking it forward. We're going to train one of our operations staff up to be that. We're going to have a drop-in centre, so they'll have a fortnightly clinic. But we also do a lot of events for them as well, where we'll get them together and we'll get in different events for them to do, and we feed them and everything. So they all get together and come together as a team. So,
thank you very much. Thank you.
Excuse me.
Yes, Councillor.
The absence rates, it's
yeah.
completely redacted. Which, I mean, I'm trying to understand why you wouldn't want us to know. Is it because it's high, or is it okay, or, you know, can you give us a summary?
The summary of our absence rates are that they're not excessively high. They're in line with our municipal contracts. It varies throughout the year, obviously, but we are suffering with a little bit of an ageing workforce at the moment, because we have a lot of guys that have been there from sort of 15 to 45 years, some of our employees, so they are getting on in age. But there's a mix of short-term sickness and long-term sickness. Our absence rate averages about 6% across the year for short and long-term sick. I think normally we're at about 2% long-term sick and 3 to 4% on short-term sickness. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Page 20, page 21. Page 22.
Yes.
Ooh, yes. Okay.
On the health and safety, it says here you. I take it you've got a health and safety committee.
Yes. Yep.
And how many of your workforce are safety reps, and what sort of level of health and safety training have they got? Like, have they been on the appropriate courses that trade unions would send their reps on?
Yeah, we have it. We have two trade union representatives that sit on the health and safety committee. Both of those have gone through those union training courses, their inductions. The latest one that's just become a trade union representative is about to start an apprenticeship. Part of that apprenticeship that we've arranged for them is potentially going to include an IOSH managing safety in the workplace. We always have at least one driver, one loader on the health and safety committee, so that gives us a view of their points of view on both parts of the job. The union reps are always represented, and then sometimes it's different drivers and different loads, but we'll try and at least one driver. And then we also include the supervisors and obviously myself and Blade as well.
Where it says here on the near misses, it's quite a good record actually. Mm. When you get a near miss, and you've got the employees of Viola reporting near misses, it's a lot better for us as the general public, because they're spotting dustbins that could be dangerous to us.
Mm-hmm. The close calls we report, a number of different ones. There are bins, there are overgrown hedges, there are sort of dangerous areas where they have to go. It could be lighting somewhere or anything. Mm. And it can be things that they identify in a truck, or things that they can suggest to improve things, improve their sort of PPE that they've got. They're working out in all weathers. One of the constant things we're talking about in terms of the health and safety committee is the uniform and the PPE, so we provide a lot better waterproof gear that they've ever had before. It's all proper Gore-Tex. It's expensive, but that's their tools of their trade. They're out in that job, out in those environments every day basically, so there's a lot of work on the footwear that they work, the gloves they use. Veolia just introduced a whole new PPE catalogue, which has different colours. It's not just orange, where it used to be orange, and I use orange and red, because two colours makes them more visible to people. So it's an essential part, to be honest. It's taken very seriously in the depot. We recently, we'll probably see it in next year's report, but we had an increase in accidents. So this is where we started looking at reasons behind it. It's where we looked at our ageing workforce, our training. We had two stand down days where we brought in all the risk and assurance advisors from Veolia's municipal division. They came in, they went out and spoke to our employees, they went out to the operations and spoke to them and asked them about health and safety, what they thought of it. We followed that up with a leadership day where there was all our supervisors and myself and Dave went out with a senior leadership team. Up to where Pascal, our chief exec, went out and saw crews, took them out and bought them coffees and spoke to them about health and safety to find out what their issues were or what they're not and what we can help with. So as a whole within Veolia, it's vitally important.
So,
yeah.
Most
okay.
of the workers are in no know-how of how to run risk assessments, dynamic risk assessments, where to go to find the appropriate folders and paperwork.
All the paperwork is in place that's accessible to them. But they're also trained to do dynamic risk assessments. Ultimately, we train them how to assess whether it's safe for weather to go down, whether it's safe for them to reverse down. They have their reversing procedures. But no street is ever the same for the whole year. So it's, they are trained that if there's a car parked differently, they'll have to do it differently. And then they act appropriately. So,
it's a heavy industry for.
Thank you very much for that. Yes, I mean, it's good to know that you take everything on board when there has been an accident, do everything you can to make sure it doesn't happen again. So, brilliant. Page 23. Page 24.
I'm going to be shouting down. I've made a note on page 24. There's no colour. So all these charts should be prepared by somebody. You can't understand them because they're not in colour. And we're told, well, you can see them on your laptop. Well, as it happens, my laptop's been in the dock for 5 days, so I can't see them colour. Is there any reason why the committee couldn't have a set of documents?
Can we ask that question, please?
Chairman, I'm sure that
if the screen had been working, we would have seen them in colour.
I think it would probably, But it would be nice when you're sat at home and you're reading these to see that if we can do something about that. Would I be asking? Is it you, Josh?
It'll be committee services.
Pardon?
It'll be committee services. I'll speak to Ian Curry. There is a standard there where we're trying to save on colour printing, the cost of it. But for reports where there are certainly a lot of scraps in there,
where there isn't this.
Saying regarding colours, because trying to do it in grayscale is really, really difficult. So we'll pass that.
Thank you very much indeed.
And this one is obvious. I can see where that's green. That looks, you know what I mean? It's like that. The rest of them all you've got no idea.
I understand.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Page 25. Page 26. Page 27. Everybody happy? Good. Page 28. Talking about page 28, about complaints, what areas of complaints do you get? What's the main, focus of complaints, please?
The main complaint that we'll get is where a bin is locked out for a reason. So, for example, we've got to a property and the bin's not out. We record it on our in-cab device that it's not out. Or if we lock a property out, say it's contaminated, if the resident disputes that, it will come to through us as a complaint. So we then investigate it further. So we can then have a look at the CCTV on the footage on the vehicles. They have 360 degree CCTV footage. So if a resident says, "Oh, my bin was definitely out," we can then review the footage of that collection, and we can either send them the footage or the photo or still saying, "No, there's the end of your drive and your bin's not out," or we see that it was out and we then go back to that collection. So the main of them are contesting lockouts, whether it's contaminated or not. Again, where the crews lock out from contamination, they should be taking photos of that contamination, so we can say to the resident that that photo goes directly into the contact center. So if the resident then calls up to say why was it contaminated, even though we leave them a tag to explain why it was, they can actually see the photo in the contact center. They can say, "Well, there was a shoe on the top of your blue bin or whatever." But it may be then that they still contest that, and then that will come through as a complaint. So that's the majority of our complaints.
Thank you very much for that. Anybody else got any questions on that? No. Right, page 29. Everybody happy? Right, page 30.
Just to confirm what DMR stands for. On that
DMR, dry mix recycling.
Dry mix recycling. Just
there's a lot of different.
Page
31. Page 32. Page 33. Page 34.
Sorry, madam.
Yes.
We were looking at the solar power installation.
Thank you, Councillor Jones, for picking that up. Yeah. Did you want to say anything?
No, just I've just written it. I've been invited. solar power installation supply to Target Drive to provide power for you, presumably, to help them.
Yeah.
Good.
And is that picked up by yourself, the expense?
Yeah, it was what was discussed earlier. We've put proposals together for those. Costs obviously will become further down the line once we've confirmed costs and gone ahead if we're going to go ahead with it. But at the moment, because the environmental permitting regulations may change,
uh-huh.
we could spend various amounts of money on putting that solar panels in, but then we'd have to knock that building down and redo something else, so
right.
then we'd be doing it again. So we might take 12 months to then go, right, this is what the regulations now are,
mm-hmm.
we can now do this either on a new building or we can put them in.
Something
you've
Thank got
you.
In your back pocket.
Yeah.
Councillor.
I was just going to say, because you know you said you've already been doing, you're already getting the pricing in for the other works you need to be done. Do you know the timescale on that? Obviously then know when the buildings will be complete, the building work will be complete, so then maybe you can start
for
looking
at for the solar panels or for the environmental permit?
You said there was some groundworks going on, some like pipes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I swear I saw that somewhere.
The safety improvements in the yard.
Well,
so we
yeah,
put
yeah,
some
exactly.
arm
yeah, yeah.
We, those have now been completed.
So they've been completed.
Yeah, they've
so
been
you may
complete,
be,
yeah,
maybe
so
you're waiting for the environmental legislation to come in firmly.
Just for
and
the
then
solar panels, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Sam.
Okay.
Thank you.
Page 34. Page 35. Page 36. Everybody happy?
What?
Page 37. You might be going early tonight, lads. Page 38. Page 39. Page 40. Can I just ask, you talk about miscollections, and I know we've talked about it a lot tonight, but is this mainly the rural areas or the urban areas, or is it, you know, it's not?
Probably a mix of both, to be
is
honest.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think obviously there are probably more numbers in the urban area, but then
mm.
there's more properties there, so I think percentage wise,
mm.
I think it can be both. You tend to find the lanes being shut off more in a rural area, which will then give you 3 or 4 miscollections maybe, but
mm-hmm.
it can be a mix of both. There's no
yeah.
specific area.
And Councillor Brown brought up earlier about you know, people having to have assisted. The bins being moved and what have you for them. Now you talked about using the web page for putting out different ideas and what have you about what's happening. And I'm just concerned that, you know, some of these people with the assisted bins and what have you, would it help if we put the stickers back on, you know, because these are probably some of the people that can't use computers and what have you, and I'm just wondering what we can do to help them more.
We could do, but that would be, looking at the costs of re-stickering bins and different things, it's quite prohibitive, but that is ultimately down to the council for that reason, because
right, okay.
that, the communication side of things is not within the contract for Veolia.
Yeah, right, okay, thank you.
That is correct. I do have to contact the borough to get them to do the assisted bin collection.
Yeah, I'm just concerned about that. They're probably not using computers and that. They probably don't realise and then forget what they can put in a bin and what they can't put in a bin. I think that's where I'm coming from. And that's what... So that's what I was, you know... And it's saying with... somewhere in the report, I don't know which page it's on actually, we talked about heavy sofas and things like that being moved,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they have to pay to have that done.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially if they're disabled and they're elderly and that,
mm-hmm.
is there anything we can do to help them get these objects moved?
There is a bulky items collection which we
mm-hmm.
provide on behalf of the council. Those are booked through the contact centre. Those items normally need to be at least out of the property. The problem we have is going into someone's property then removing
the items
causing more problems than we have. But as long as the item is visible and we can see it from the you know, outside the property, then it can be collected.
Yeah.
Depending on the item, not every item can be done.
Can
yeah.
just ask, is there a charge for that?
I'm just asking, yeah, I was just going to follow up by saying
there is a charge for the bulky items collection, yeah.
What sort of amount are you talking about?
You know what,
new idea?
£49
For 2 items, Becky?
Three items.
Could
that be reduced for disabled people?
I'm sorry?
Could that be reduced for disabled people?
Well, this is where I'm coming from, actually, what we can do to help our elderly and disabled people, you know, with any... I mean, I had an institute where I had a phone call from someone, and they were elderly, and they wanted to get... Of course, they were, you know, they'd only got the pension and everything, and so we had to ring around to try to get somebody to do it, but I'm just wondering if there's anything that we can do to help.
I think in respect of the collections from our point of view, it's something that's dictated by fees and charges, I would have think. Is that correct, Jess? Yeah, yeah, so that can be set by fees and charges.
Thank you very much, Councillor Fordham. Thank you for that. Okay, so we're on to page 41. Yeah. We talked about visits because I've got that written down. Page 42.
I did ask Madam Chairman, because when I read it, first of all, I wonder what a microsite was, but I've read it elsewhere, it's explained.
An additional bin project rollout. Just explain that a little bit more, please.
The additional bins project is over a number of years, some properties may have obtained additional bins. They literally can be presented. The crews may not know where those bins come from, so instead of having a miscollection, they'll empty the bin. Also, in areas where we have cluster points, where a lot of bins all are presented together, or collection points, there can be more bins there than what there has been.
Yeah, yeah.
A number of times it can be reported that the bin's broken or defective, but Street Scene at the moment can't come and collect them when the bin's full, so they may deliver an additional bin and that old one's still there, then the resident may use them again. So we're working on individual areas, going through a process of sending stickers to residents for them to sticker their bin, and then over a period of time we then go back and anything that hasn't got stickers in we can remove, or only the one bin is emptied that's got the sticker on rather
right.
than two bins. So it's a way of... We're all ultimately, especially with refuse, if they're presenting more bins, it's increasing the amount of refuse that we're collecting, which is then decreasing the recycling rate.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then obviously it stops people from recycling because they can just put it in an additional bin. So it's a bit twofold, but it's that process of identifying where additional bins are to then reduce the number of additional bins.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Sorry.
Just leave it from that. Can you have like multiple recycling bins then? Because we've got like two blue bins. Is that like a green bin thing? What do you mean?
You can. Yeah. So your refuse bin, you can only have one bin.
Right,
refuse
okay.
bin. But if there's a requirement for additional recycling, because we want to promote the recycling, and that's what we want. So yes, you can have more bags and more bins. Yeah.
Thank you, Councillor Lisa.
I know that in the Potteries, for example, you can get an additional bin for things like incontinence pads and things like that. Is that the type of thing that the additional bin would cover? Or?
It's normally a larger bin that would provide, because a standard issued bin is a 180 litre green refuse bin.
Yeah.
For instances like that, then they can have an additional bin, which gives them extra capacity for doing it. So,
Okay. Yeah.
Right, and then page 43. And I think that comes to the end of no more questions to Viola. Can I say, gentlemen, thank you so much for a very comprehensive replies and that, and listening. And on behalf of the committee, can I say thank you to Viola, because I think the job that you do, the satisfaction you're giving our customers, is very, very good. And I've got to say, as a councillor, and I think it's probably speaks for everybody around this table, we get many phone calls about people complaining about their bins. So on behalf of the committee and staff of Borough, thank you very much,
thank you
for coming along and giving your input.
Thank you.
But don't worry, we'll keep you on board and we'll give you...
Chairman, if you think about all the problems that they have and that they handle, I wonder if you'd ever thought of doing anything else other than being in Westminster.
Thank you
also,
so much.
Madam Chairman.
Yeah.
How well the vehicles are kept. I'm not talking about the inside, you know, but certainly on the outside, they're always so clean and so on. You go into neighbouring authorities and they're filthy. Whereas I don't know whether you've got a vehicle wash or what, but they always look so smart and...
it's basically a jet wash that we have on site, and the drivers look after their own trucks inside and out.
Yeah.
And
they certainly take a pride in the vehicles there.
Absolutely. So As I say, thank you, gentlemen, and you know, I think the school project, as I said to you, is absolutely wonderful, and you know, I think we've all heard that. And if we've got any schools or anything that want you to go and give a talk, that would be great. And as I say, looking after our most vulnerable, which is one of the things I mentioned about the disabled and the elderly, you know, if we can do more to help them, that would be brilliant. So thank you very much, and you're quite welcome to stay, or you can disappear. And thank you very, very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Right, ladies and gentlemen, committee. Right, we're on to air quality annual status now on page 44. Okay, is there anything you want to say, Councillor Fordham, before?
If you agree, Chair, I'd just give a very brief summary of the report.
Yeah, that's fine.
Open for questions. I'm supported here by Jill, who has all the technical.
Hello, Jill. Welcome.
I'm struggling to attain. I think we start by saying it's a statutory requirement for local authorities to review and assess air quality and take action when pollution levels are not met. To do this, the local authorities have to submit an annual report to DEFRA, and that contains details about air quality within their areas, along with actions that are being taken or will be taken in an effort to minimise air pollution, to ensure it's within the legal limits. There are two pollutants that are assessed by the Borough Council: nitrogen dioxide, NO2, and particulate matter, such as stuff that comes off cars. We only monitor the nitrogen dioxide, and we use numbers supplied by DEFRA's mapping, to report back on the particulates. And we're assessing nitrogen dioxide, I think I'm right in saying, over 28 locations in the borough. That's right, Jill, isn't it? So what you have is the 2023 report, and I think that the four important takeaways from that report are, firstly, that levels of NO2 and particulate matter continue to be within legal limits in the borough as a whole and at each of the monitoring locations. The second point will be there are no air quality management areas that are required. The third point would be that DEFRA have reviewed our report and are satisfied with the content and have no recommendations or comments to make. And I think the fourth point is that actions that were identified in the 2022 report have been completed. So I think that's the summary, Chair, if I can throw it over.
Thank you very much, Councillor Fordham. I mean, can I just ask, do we do any air quality monitors outside schools? And if
with the county council, then they've got something called Air Aware. It's a scheme that they run with schools within the borough then, and across Staffordshire as a whole. So they've got monitors that they do put at certain points and with certain schools as part of the scheme that they're running at the moment.
Right, thank you very much for that. Yes, I just wondered whose job it was to do that. And I've just got another question, and that is, you know, what impact, I mean, I understand that the air quality in Stafford is very good, brilliant, but is it affected by with the closure of the M6, when we've got all these big lorries coming through the town? And absolutely.
At certain points, particularly, as you say, if there's roadworks going on, you can find that some months the levels are higher. But because the nitrogen dioxide, which is the most, the pollutant that we most associate with the road traffic then, that's monitored over a year, so it's averaged over the year then to give you the correct value to report on. Mm-hmm. So even if you've got roadworks, say, taking place in January, maybe they finished by February, and then the levels have dropped down, so you're still within the limits values then for the year.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that. Has anybody got any questions on this? Right, Councillor Nixon. Yeah.
I appreciate that the limits are within the exact levels. However, if you go
Can you just raise your voice a little? Sorry.
I appreciate that the levels are within the accepted range, but if you go out of county into an area that really does have pure air and then come back in again, you can smell the difference. And at the end of the day, we do have the M6. Could we put in something like a park and ride? I know somebody at a pre-meeting was saying that speed limits on motorways can make a difference. I wasn't aware of that.
Yes.
Are there extra things that we can do? Because seriously, we can, if you go out of the area into an area that is clear and come back, you can smell it really strongly.
Yeah, so with the speed limits, that was an interesting one, especially with the M6 when we had all of those works going on. And they opened up the extra running lane because that was bringing cars closer then to properties that might be affected. But because all of the movement of traffic was continual, it actually helped with the air quality in the area. So it is something that we could look at.
What about park and ride? Because we do get gridlocked.
We could have a look at it. I'm not sure that that would be myself that would be the best one to talk about park and ride, unfortunately, because I think it's more to do with the infrastructure and the way that people access the town centre and things there.
But we do very easily, I think everybody would agree, we can very easily get gridlocked.
Thank you. Anybody else got any questions? Yes, Councillor.
Just on the standards, is there like a tier system to it? Is it just like a pass or fail kind of?
Yeah, so the air quality limits for annual nitrogen dioxide levels is 40 milligrams per meter cubed. I think we're currently at 25 is the average level in staff, so we're well underneath the limit there. What happens if you meet that annual limit then is that you have to put things into place called the air quality management area, and you have to come up with an air quality action plan to go along with that then. If you exceed it, yeah.
Mm.
So places like Stoke and Newcastle, they've had issues there with their air quality, and so that's what they've had to put in place. I worked at Newcastle previously, so I was involved with setting up their air quality management areas. So it's a big job to undertake, so I'm very glad to be in Stafford where it's not working. So yeah, you don't have to do that here at the moment.
So it is just a pass or fail then, basically?
You've got once you declare an air quality management area, if your levels are over the legal limit, then you've got to put in place measures then that mean that you're reducing that level over a certain period of time to bring you back within the limit. But yeah, it is just it's a straight, either you're in it or you're not.
Yeah.
But I think the principle is that government is looking to reduce those limits. Not sitting on our laurels, looking to improve that.
Everybody happy? More questions? Have we got enough on page 46 talks about electric vehicle charging points? Do you think we've got enough in the area, or do you think we should be having more? We had a planning application actually must be over 12 months ago now, about having put charging points on a little car park near Victoria Park. But I can't see there's any charging points there yet.
No, they haven't done it yet.
No, I'm right, aren't I, Anne? Yeah, I thought I was.
So
you're looking at nodding, so you're agreeing with me.
I think with electric charging points, it's often trying to find the right location for them. It's the problem. Particularly with new builds, it's one of the better things to do with them, isn't it? They tend to have EV units as part of the development, so that you can charge your car where you need to charge it there overnight, rather than in the car park where you might only be there for 20 minutes or so. It's not as useful.
Yeah.
I know that there's work that's ongoing with county at the moment where they're looking at funding for putting more EV charging points in throughout the borough. I think we came up with 20 more locations that they could be put into. We're waiting to see what happens with that.
One of the issues also is charging at home if you're living in a town with terraced houses. How do you actually accommodate that?
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult.
But I
think it's being looked at.
Thank you very much. So we're all happy with the air quality in Stafford, are we? With no more queries. Right, thank you very much for that. Thank you. Right, we moved on to page, 49, Community Delivery Plan. Right, page 49. Anybody any questions or queries? Everybody happy there? Okay. Page 50. It says on here supporting community groups undertaking litter picks, and I know I've had this conversation, but I'm a little bit concerned that my understanding is that litter heroes are now stepping back a little, and I don't know whether in some areas, and I know in part of my area actually, we've got a litter pick scheme going that's done once a month, but with no insurance, and we were under litter heroes with their insurance, but now they're stepping back a little. We're not a parish council, so we've no money flying around, so I just wondered if there was any way that the borough could help in that situation, you know, because if we don't, then the litter picking will finish, and I don't know whether anybody else has got the same problem. The litter picking will finish, and then that'll put more onus on street scene. So, and bearing in mind this is done all voluntary and that, and children involved as well, and it's encouraging people to, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I think the issue we have there is the fact that if we wanted to use our umbrella insurance for volunteer groups, they would have to come under our control, which would mean we would have to then supervise them on the day and things like that. We'd have to make sure that they were operating in a method that we were actually happy with. So realistically, we haven't got the resource to supervise these groups. Unfortunately, there is an organisation called Skivvies, which is a Staffordshire Youth programme. They do support local charities and volunteer groups and things like that, with things like access to cheaper rate insurance. So what I would suggest is that we encourage community groups to talk to Skivvies in the first instance where they can, and see what they can, if they want to go down that route of having their own employer's liability insurance for their volunteers, then I think that's probably a good route to go down.
Thank you for that, Joss. And I fully understand where you're coming from about we've got to come under the Borough Council banner. But I'm just wondering whether, you know, the council could provide just a little pot of money, you know, to give to help to pay for these communities to be able to do it. I just wondered, is there a little pot of money anywhere that you could? I mean, Anne's looking at me and I'm looking at Anne and thinking,
I just wonder how you contact Skivvies.
Oh, well, yeah, well, I can help you with that.
They've got quite a good website.
You could form a parish council.
But I'm just thinking of the amount of work that we save in street scene, you know, and if there's just a little pot of money somewhere. It won't cost a lot, but I asked that question on behalf of people around the table.
Process to see if we can. It would depend on how many groups came forward. We'd obviously have to limit that pot of money
to a few hundred pounds. If you could look at that would be great.
Councillor
Hood.
Yeah, talking with my stone and bloom hat on, we raise our own insurance money. It's very complicated. You know, you've got groups who will spot litter in the middle of a dual carriageway. You certainly wouldn't be insured to go across and do that.
Oh, no.
That's where your hive is. And I know throughout the borough there are many groups who go out litter picking, and I wonder how many of them have got insurance.
Exactly. And especially with children involved.
Yeah.
That's quite a worry. Yeah. So, Councillor Neeson.
No.
You're okay, are you? Yeah, okay. Right, okay. So, we're page 50, we've done, right. Page 59, 58, sorry. Am I? There's a 51. It's all right, I've got printing on the top of my sheets. Really confusing. So, page 51, is everybody okay with that?
Well, it says on here, it was monitoring construction works associated with it, and it mentions HS2. And we're just wondering, you know, what sort of stage are they at? Has it completely stopped, or is it just being wound down? Or we're just wondering where we are with that, really.
Can anybody answer that? Councillor Fordham, you're looking a bit. Yeah? No? No? No?
I don't know, like one or two of us, I've probably had various advice.
I can tell you of someone I've spoken to today who's been involved and losing money because of HS2, and they've had people come up from London only this week to talk to them, and they've been given a week to make their mind up as to what they want to do. So I'm just telling you that out of interest,
yes.
Really. Don't monitor
yeah.
that because it's.
Yeah.
But I'm just telling you that things are happening.
Well, the latest correspondence I had was telling me that they had frozen all decisions on land and the property.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're working to protect their assets.
Yes.
Yeah. For example, there's a strip of land at, just near to the marina at Aston, and they're going to have roadwork put. Some sort of cone in there because they're doing some sort of protection work
yeah.
to protect the land that they own.
Yeah, interesting.
Right. Okay. Page 52. Everybody seems happy. I mean, you look at it in a way quite likely. Page 53.
Yes, John.
Yeah, and I've got a question as well, yeah.
I'd just like to bring it to the committee's attention. 2.4.1, where it explains about a focus group. Myself, the leader, and Victoria Cooper were privileged to go to Elaine's High School, or Elaine's Academy as it is now, and meet with Andy Whitehall, who is running a boxing group for children who've suffered trauma, and he's also making sure that I shouldn't use children, that they're young adults,
mm-hmm.
some of them, and staff throughout other schools are being given trauma training, and it really is such a success. We were lucky to meet one of the girls that has boxed for England and learned her boxing through Andy Whitehall and his gyms and Elaine's school. He's been given a classroom which the young people have painted scarlet, which I thought was a rather interesting choice of colour. And they're welcome to go there when maybe they're feeling a little anxious or just want a break. And it really, really was a remarkable opportunity to be given to go along and see that.
Thank you very much for the gap, Councillor. Is there any way that can be put out anywhere else in the borough, or is it just something that's...
I think, having spoken to him, it already is going out to the borough. They've got some big plans, and if anybody would like to help them, there's quite a bit of equipment that they still need, especially books on trauma training and diaries, and it's just very inspirational when you go there and see the work that he's doing with the young people.
Thank you. Yes, Councillor Barron.
Jill, was it the guy that was on the Marsden Road, he had a gym there, is it the same person?
I don't know, but I will ask Victoria Cooper.
Sorry, yeah, he's on Browning Street.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Yeah,
is he still
Street.
There?
Thank you. I'm just thinking, just talking out of turn here probably, Councillor Hood, but I'm just wondering if some of the county councillors got some money that they'd like, it's too late now, but you know, that they could have probably helped with
yes.
that. But anyway, yes. that's something for the future. Yeah, okay. So we're on page, what page are we on? 53. Yeah. Can I just ask, it's probably a question for Victoria, actually, please. I understand that the Police Crime Commissioner, because of the antisocial behaviour, gives you a pot of money. How is that broken down over the last 12 months, and where has it gone? And how much is it, please?
So we get around 69,000, which is locality deal funding.
69?
Yeah. That's for early intervention and prevention. So our duty is to reduce crime and disorder. We also get from the Police and Crime Commissioner £10,000, and it's to address different whatever his priorities are. So for the last 2 years, that's been antisocial behaviour. And
right, okay.
This year, the antisocial behaviour money has gone towards the public space protection order, and so far, and
and we've also piloted a pop-up club with partners, so we get a range of different partners to go out to hotspot areas and basically stand up under a gazebo and try and engage with communities and get them to report to us. It's to trial just a bit of extra visibility, and then we've got some funding there for some kind of ad hoc target hardening, so I think it could be a ring doorbell or just things to make people feel safer.
I think talking about antisocial behaviour, and I think I'm talking for the whole of the committee, it'd be nice to see how that money's broken down and where it's gone and how it's been spent, please.
Yes, well, we do provide a report. So we have to do a full evaluation to the Police and Crime Commissioner for May, and then we generally bring that back to scrutiny the next, whenever the next one is after that, and that's all been agreed. And then in March, we've also got Chief Inspector Giles Parsons coming along with Anna to update on the work of the Community Wellbeing Partnership anyway, so that will let you know what we're doing.
Yeah. Am I right in thinking the committee would like to see a breakdown of how much money spent?
Yes,
please.
When did you say Giles Parsons would?
March.
Right. Anybody else got any questions? Yes, Councillor Nixon. Are you cold?
Yes, I've got something to add to 2.4.2 before you turn over.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you very well.
I've got something to add on 2.4.2 before you turn over.
Okay, yeah, carry on.
I'm aware of how safeguarding policy needs to be tweaking, and I was fortunate enough to speak to Jess Phillips MP about it, and she agreed with me and gave me some extra information which fueled my perspective, so I'd like to be able to feed into that, please.
Okay. Do we think on 2.4.2, the domestic abuse, is it on the increase in our area, or is it?
It's a high priority area.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is.
Right. Okay.
We can feedback on that as well in the update.
Thank you. Pardon?
Into my feed into that sort of policy document, into the policy, if we can have a conversation.
Yeah. Okay. Right, let's move on to page 55. Any queries on there? Sorry? Yeah?
It's been said before here that what's causing homelessness is complex, and I totally agree with that. The proportion of homeless population does have an amount of people with either undiagnosed or diagnosed autism. And I'm worried about it, because autistic people aren't being supported in the school systems at the moment due to problems getting EHCP through. And these people do see things very differently, and I can give an example. I gave that to an autistic child and said, how many triangles can you see there? And they could see two, because they saw it like that. And that's just one tiny, tiny, minuscule example of how differently they perceive things, their sensory, their nervous system, the visually, just they see things so differently. And in areas of the ward where these people are finding it difficult to access housing for whatever reason, or just be able to function in the same way that people do on average, I'm aware of people going to the toilets or doing other bodily functions in areas that you wouldn't expect, as well as on top of cars and bonnets. And I can just see a problem brewing, because I don't know about all of you, but certainly when I was younger, there seemed to be an awful lot of lot less autistic people, and now there is a bigger proportion of people with autism, and they're not getting the support that they needed. And they do have a very different way of seeing the world, and it is going to cause problems. And it's just something that I can see that's going to cause difficulties.
I appreciate what you're saying, Councillor Nixon, and it is something that's high on the agenda at the Midland Partnership Foundation Trust with children and autism. you know, but I think it's not, we're a bit of out of our remit here as far as this committee is concerned about trying to solve those problems, because that is probably a county council issue, you know, with the children and
that,
the,
yeah,
the
it's
getting.
Chairman,
so,
can,
yeah.
Can I come in, Rick,
yes.
Before Anna has a chance to come in? I understand what Councillor Nixon is talking about, the complex needs of the homeless.
Mm.
We have officers who know to a T the complexities of the mental health
mm-hmm.
of virtually every homeless person and rough sleeper that we have in the borough.
Mm.
I am so impressed with the work that the team does, led by Haven. It's just incredible. And when you talk about maybe I recognise somebody, I'm given a description straight away.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yes,
mm.
we know who that is, we know
mm.
who they are.
Mm.
So I'll hand over to Anna now.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm not sure there was a specific question there.
That wasn't trying to have a go at you at all, because I think you do absolutely amazing work. You work really hard and you've really tried to solve it and do. You've put so much effort in and done an awful lot about it. So that's not a criticism. That's of you at all. I'm just seeing how society is changing, and I can see how this is building up, because I can see the little ones and how they are just now. So this is going to be a growing problem, unfortunately.
Yep.
I think just a comment, if it's okay. We invest significantly in the training for the officers to ensure that they understand the complexities of the need that they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And we work extremely closely with the Partnership Foundation Trust on a daily basis, but constantly. They are always on the phone to the case officers there to try and work really closely in partnership to ensure we get the right solutions for each client that comes through the door. And those who don't come through the door as well.
Yeah, I can understand where you're coming from, Anna. You know, I'm sitting here as chair of this committee and having a son that had got problems, shall we say, but trying to get him when he disappeared and trying to get him to come home, he preferred to be homeless. Now, that is lifestyle choice, and when they're an adult, you cannot change that. It's very, very difficult. I mean, I've been in a situation where I begged him, run the car at the side, get in the car. No. You know, so it's very, very difficult. And I'm speaking from experience now, from somebody that have been there, read the book, and it's not easy trying to deal with homeless people. Because some people prefer to be. I know it sounds really sad. And how you help these people, and really, it's a very difficult situation.
And help the people that can see it.
Very, very difficult, yes. So I think as a borough, we're doing all we can and as much as we can. And thank you for your kind comments for Anna. I think that really helps, you know. Thank you. Right, okay. So where are we now? We've done page 54 and 55.
Mm-hmm.
55, we talked about these units of these emergency accommodation, Anna. Whereabouts are they, please? And what, you know... What's the up-to-date situation on that? Thank you.
Okay, so we are at the very final stages of securing the units. So until that has happened, I'm afraid I can't say exactly where they are. And even if we had, it's probably not best to publicise where the units are, because we obviously need to consider
the fully understand. Thank you very much. Right, page 56. Any queries? No? Page 57, we've got on that 2.5.3, we've got the disability facility grant coming through to this committee on the 16th of January, so that'll be quite interesting.
It's the March meeting.
Oh, I've changed.
Oh, yes, it's changed.
I do apologise. No, okay. Changed to the March meeting. Okay, right. Right, okay, thank you. Thank you very much. So we're now on to page 58, which is the work programme. Okay, 16th of January. So that's going to March, is it now? That one, disability.
Yeah.
We've talked about doing a task and finish for food waste, talking about future in the future. I'd like to think we could keep, I think you've probably picked a lot up from that meeting that we had with Chris Butcher about housing and that, and found that very useful. And I think that's something we need to keep on board as well. And quite interesting, I thought that was, you know, cold is more important than what mould and damp, which I found, is there anything that the committee would like to see on the work programme? Yes.
Suicide prevention.
Sorry?
Suicide prevention.
Okay.
From the Samaritans and from Andy's Man Club and people like that.
You were asking somebody to come along and give us a talk on it at the committee?
Yes.
Right, okay.
Andy's Man Club.
Pardon?
Andy's Man's Club. They're taking people right, left and centre to promote the organisation.
Yeah, we've got to remember that a lot of this probably sits with county, but I do take your point about like suicide. They're doing a lot of work at county on suicide. But okay, Samaritans.
I have come across peer-reviewed journal articles.
I'm sorry?
I have come across peer-reviewed journal articles about Stafford North and suicide and the suicide figures.
I know, you know, there's a lot of work going on, as I say, at county.
Yeah.
And I've sat on committees over there, you know, regarding suicide. It's quite worrying, actually, and especially in the farming community as well.
Yeah, in the rural areas and amongst men.
Yeah. So I'll have a talk with people and see what we can do regarding that. Anything that, Anna, yes? I would very much like you, because they're down on my list actually, Housing Plus, you know, that we keep them on board and we keep fetching them back to committee, because if you haven't got a good home and somewhere to go to, then it's such an impact on your mental well-being and your health and everything, isn't it? So, yes, definitely. Thank you very much, yeah. Something we can ask Housing Plus. I mean, I've got quite a good contact with them, so I will. I'll take that on board. Okay. Right. Anything else that the lift committee would like to talk about or mention? Can I just mention one thing? I'm talking about Housing Plus. Now, talking to one of the guys that works there, and they've got allotments. I don't know whether you're all aware of that. Housing Plus own quite a few allotments. And four that they've highlighted to me that have got spaces. One is in Blythe Bridge, actually, which is Councillor Dobson's area, I think, Armathwaite Drive. But then I've got Brookhouse Drive in Barlaston. I've got Meadow Road in Stafford. And I've got Priory Road in Stone. So if you know of anybody that wants an allotment and there's some available, then please get in touch with Housing Plus, because they do own them. And with that in mind, I'd just like to say, I think it's been a very good meeting. I think we've really enjoyed listening to Viola and all the good work that they're doing. And also thank you, Josh, for coming along about air quality and Councillor Ford, and thank you very much. And thank you, Anna and Becky, and sorry, I forgot your name now. And Vicky, for coming along. Thank you very much, and I declare the meeting closed, and a safe journey home, everyone. Thank you.